Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. I am going to be hosting Dad and Attorney George Fothery, and he is going to make a plea for vaccine safety. So I am very anxious to pick him up the video from his speech at the presentation to the legislature is directly under the screen of this radio program, but I didn't see the part that I was applauding, and I'm going to ask him about that. Thank you very much while I pick him up. Hello, George Fothery. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sally. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I have to tell you, I was applauding when I saw you speaking at the addressing the legislature in California regarding SB 277, and I didn't see on the video you sent the part that I was applauding, which is when you brought up the CDC whistleblower. You're the first person possibly ever to address this to a legislature, and it was extremely exciting. Is it in that video or not?
Yeah. It comes up in the Q&A after the video. So I think the video that I sent was the presentation that I made, which was a little over 7 minutes. And then afterwards, some of the members asked questions, and in response to one of the questions, the point I was trying to make was that this. I was trying to make a point about the constitutionality of the proposed legislation and how one of the things that the legislators should consider in passing it was that as soon as this becomes law, if it should become law, the state's going to be inundated by a wave of class action litigation to invalidate the law. And given the information that we're learning about the disproportionate impact that some of these vaccines have on the Black community, as most recently evidenced by Dr. William Thompson's letter stating that he and his colleagues at the CDC had admitted critical findings related to the higher risk that Black boys are at in connection with receiving certain vaccines at a young age. In light of that evidence and in light of the disproportionate impact that the legislation would have on a working class and poor Black and Latino families in the state, that it was likely that other groups would be interested in joining the lawsuit, groups that traditionally have stood up for the interests of these communities. So that was the point that I was making.
Right. And I have to say, though, that was historic. That you addressed a legislature, any legislature anywhere in this land, and brought up this very important issue, because this is the Senate had a questioning of the CDC, Dr. Schuchat, I believe is her name, and I was like, gee whiz, William W. Thompson has just been given whistleblower status by President Obama. Why are you interviewing the wrong CDC person? Anybody other than William W. Thompson was the wrong person to be questioning. And we are calling for people to call the Congressional Oversight Committee and say that we would like them to subpoena or just invite, because he's eager to speak, William W. Thompson, the whistleblower. And I've done that, but I'm also saying to people every Monday, call your congressperson and ask them how to do the same and how far they've come every week. So what did the Oversight Committee say, dear congressperson, who is responsible to respond to me? You know, so it's one thing to call the Oversight Committee chair, and that's a good thing to do. But every Monday, follow up with your congressperson and see where they've gotten in regard to that. So, yes, you made many good points, George Fothery, not the least of which is that your own son was in the hospital undergoing seizures, which is a very common outcome from vaccination, and you made the trip out of concern for your child who was in the hospital and for your child who is unvaccinated as a result of the vaccine damage done to your first child.
Yeah, that's correct. I think, you know, the what we need to do in this fight against this legislation and other legislation around the country that's like this is we need to continue to educate our elected officials and also our fellow citizens. Part of the dialogue that's been frustrating is when people refer to me and to others who are opposing this legislation as anti-vaccine and anti-science, and that actually couldn't be further from the truth. I think if there's anything that would define our group, it's that we are proponents for vaccine safety. And, you know, I heard someone say this past week, if I'm for automobile safety, you don't call me anti-car or anti-automobile. But we're for vaccine safety. And if anyone is denying science in this debate, it's the people who continue to insist that vaccines are 100% safe and that vaccines don't cause any harm. You know, we've known at least for the past three decades that that not all vaccines are safe. In fact, you know, as you know, in the late 1980s, the United States Congress passed the National Childhood Injury Vaccine Injury Act and Program, which is a fund that's set up. It's funded by a surcharge on every vial of a vaccine that's sold in the country, a 75-cent surcharge. And that money goes to pay victims or parents who were either injured or killed by vaccines each year. To date, that fund has paid out over $3 billion. And I think there's been over 16,000 claims that have been brought. And so there is evidence that vaccines are generally safe, but they're not safe for everyone. And there's been additional studies that point to adverse reactions in specific subgroups, including African-Americans and non-Caucasian boys who tend to have more adverse reaction when these vaccines are administered below a certain age. And so I think we need to have a very honest dialogue about the science and about the data and recognize that vaccines are injuring people. And where the focus should be, as opposed to mandating that, mandating universal vaccines and not allowing parents to vaccinate their children at a different schedule or at a slower pace, what we should be focusing on is improving vaccine safety for all children and investing in new technologies and diagnostics so that we can do a better job identifying which specific children are more likely to have adverse vaccine reactions. That's the way we're going to be able to increase our overall rates of immunization, is by convincing the public that we've taken every step available to ensure vaccine safety and that we've really invested in trying to determine which children are likely to react adversely.
Well, I have to wonder what child can truly tolerate the four ingredients that the CDC readily admits to, which would be aluminum, antibiotics, and formaldehyde, and mercury. We would have to know what kind of a child could react positively to those ingredients. These are common components as listed by the CDC.
Look, I think that's an excellent point. And I think the other thing, you know, that folks have to remember, you'll hear a lot that, you know, these vaccines have been gone through rigorous testing and that they're safe and that we've done studies and they've been FDA approved. That may be true in the case of individual vaccines, but even the even the Institute of Medicine, it released a report a little over a year ago, a report entitled The Childhood Immunization Schedule and Safety. And the whole point of this report was to say, even though individual vaccines have been tested for safety, there hasn't been sufficient research to look at all of the vaccines that are on the current schedule and to understand how they interact with each other. And so what you'll hear is that vaccines have, very small amounts of some of the ingredients that you're talking about, the, you know, trace amounts, they call them. And so for that individual vaccine, it's got a trace amount of mercury, which should be able to be tolerated. But what they don't talk about is, well, yeah, that vaccine has trace amounts, and then the other vaccine has trace amounts, and you add it all up, plus you take into account the toxins that are typically found in our environment. And what hasn't been studied is, what's the aggregate impact of all of those toxins on administration in infants and in young children? And so I think the CDC and the Institute of Medicine and our government have recognized that there is no research that looks at that bigger question, and that's really where we need to focus.
Right, and the Pediatrician's Handbook has a graphic that shows how to administer, where one would stick the needle in if you were to administer 7 shots to an infant in one visit.
Yeah, I think given the information that we have about the harm that can be caused by vaccines, and equally as important, given the information that we have about how little we know about the aggregate effect, I think that parents are entitled to want to delay vaccinating their children or want to forego specific vaccines for their child, especially if they've got, some family history, or if there's another sibling who's had an adverse reaction, as in the case of my family. And I think that legislation like SB 277, which is being proposed in California, which eliminates personal belief exemption that would allow a parent to move at a little bit slower rate and would basically lock kids out of receiving an education if they weren't fully vaccinated on the schedule, I don't think that those are helpful responses to getting the information we need. I think that SB 277 and other pieces of legislation like it are, what you get when you cross politics and panic. And we need to encourage our elected officials to take a step back and first recognize that we're not in a crisis situation. In my state, California, the state each year comes out with a fact sheet entitled, "How is California Doing on the National Immunization Survey?" And for the past 5 years, that fact sheet has indicated that vaccination coverage in California is at an all-time high. It's indicated that school children are well protected against vaccine-preventable diseases. If you look at the portion of our population that takes advantage of the personal belief exemption, it's just about 2.5%. And that doesn't mean that personal belief exemption, it doesn't mean that the child is unvaccinated. It means that instead of receiving, the 6 doses of a vaccine that's recommended, maybe the parent only did 4 or 5, or instead of receiving a full vaccines according to the schedule for hepatitis B, the parents made an informed decision that, my child is at very low risk of contracting hepatitis B, so I'm not going to vaccinate my child for that. So it's only 2.5% of our population that is exercising the personal belief exemption. That percentage is down 19% from the previous year and is likely to continue going down. So we're not in a state of crisis. And for a legislator to be considering a piece of legislation that's so drastic in terms of infringing on parental rights, religious rights, First Amendment protected rights, and of great concern to me, educational rights of students, it really is a disproportionate response.
The thing about the reporting of adverse reactions that is very worrisome is, first of all, I don't know if you've read that the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System has dumped an amount of reports. But that is not the only problem. I interview parents of vaccine-injured children, and I just interviewed a woman about her child's very serious reaction to the meningitis vaccine. Now, when she rushed her child to the hospital, the emergency room nurse said that hundreds had come in that weekend with a severe reaction. What they all had in common was the meningitis vaccine. Now, why this is important is because on per medical record from this entire experience, nowhere was it mentioned that the child was reacting to the vaccine, although the staff itself had put that together quite clearly. Hundreds of children that weekend. And one has to wonder if one reaction to it after hundreds was not reported as associated with the vaccine, or the other hundreds also not reported. One might presume this to be the case. So even, you know, how can we prove all of these reactions, as your child's very severe reaction came to pass? Was your how do we, you know, we can't really assess it if it's not being reported, and the doctors should report it, but they are not. There is no penalty for not reporting it. So that's a huge problem in terms of our proving what we all know is a vaccine reaction.
Yeah, and look, I agree with the point you're making, and I think that really should be the focus of legislation and the focus of the dialogue on this. We all have a shared interest in making our vaccine safer, and we all have an interest in investing in diagnostic technology that will help us do a better job identifying which children are likely to have an adverse reaction to vaccines. And the government and the CDC and the Institute of Medicine, they don't deny that this is an area that insufficient research has been done. And so for folks who really care about this issue, for folks who really believe that vaccines are, you know, have been instrumental in improving public health, they should be focused on these two points, as opposed to, you know, forcing parents against parents' judgment and will and concern for their children to be vaccinated, when we really have not sufficiently and thoroughly studied the adverse effects that the vaccines could have. So I really just wanted to say thanks for your leadership on this important topic, and want to urge people to engage in this debate. I want to emphasize the point that we're not anti-vaccine. We, you know, I want to be able to vaccinate my daughter so that she can be protected and so she can help protect others. But given my son's reaction to his vaccine and the devastating impact that it's had on his physical and mental development, I'm not confident that I can do that. And what we need to do to is really invest in investigating vaccine safety and diagnostics for kids, so that we can help make sure that it's safe for all kids to be vaccinated.
Well, I have interviewed the Honorable Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman from the state of Georgia, after the CDC whistleblower got a lawyer. And she basically was saying, the science is good as long as the people behind the science are honorable. And this is what she is saying is the problem. I would also like to state that the Supreme Court upheld the 1986 judgment to remove liability from the pharmaceutical companies by saying that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. Now, you're a lawyer, and I'm going to ask you to pass judgment on the Supreme Court, if you don't mind, because this is quite astonishing that one could uphold something like this, and in light of the fact that they're unavoidably unsafe, wouldn't that make them unavoidably unacceptable instead of, and I quote Sean Siegel on that, he said that makes them unavoidably unacceptable, but I agree with him. And so she was basically saying that Congress can undo this. They're the ones who gave liability, removed the liability from the pharmaceutical companies. And I said, even in light of the fact that the Supreme Court has upheld this, she said, yes, well, they can override the Supreme Court. Congress can act on behalf of the people. I certainly have called my congressperson to undo this, and I hope everybody else will too. But what do you think about unavoidably unsafe as a ruling?
No, look, I agree. I think to me it's incomprehensible how our United States Congress would, you know, basically give a free pass to the pharmaceutical industry with respect to vaccine safety. I can't think of any other product or food or pharma or medicine where our Congress has basically said, we've given a blank check to drug manufacturers and we've told them that this is a vaccine that we are going to require that every kid in the country receive in order to attend school, and no matter how unsafe the product is and no matter how much injury it's caused, no matter how many deaths it's caused, the manufacturer won't be liable for any tort liability. It's incomprehensible to me. We don't do that with any other product, and there's a reason we don't do it with any other product. It's because our civil court system provides important tools for us to hold businesses accountable to make sure that their products are safe. And we see this, you know, all the time where automobile manufacturers face suits that causes them to recall products and invest in product design safety so that they've got a better and safer products. But for some reason, to the vaccine companies, Congress has given them a huge gift by saying, no matter how many kids are injured or killed from your product, you cannot be held accountable in the civil court system. And so I would certainly support repealing the vaccine injury program.
Yes. And the number of vaccines has skyrocketed since 1983 was, before 1986, they were at, I believe, 24 doses. And now in New York City, I can't even begin to tell you how bad it's gotten. We're up to 74 doses. And, 74 doses for everyone, plus 5 for us because of the mandated flu shot for the youngest annually through the age of 5. And also now someone posted the other day that the HPV has been added to the schedule for 2016. Plus, if our governor signs off on the 2 additional mandated meningitis. So we're up to 81 through the age of 18 here in New York. So, 81 versus 24, that's quite startling, an increase since this been passed by Congress.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I think the information that you're sharing with your listeners is imperative. And it's so important for us to hold ourselves accountable, to hold our elected officials accountable, that we not just take the information that we're spoon-fed about, you know, vaccine safety and the fact that, you know, oh, the studies show that there's no link between these vaccines and these parents who are claiming that their kids were injured are just crazy, you know, science deniers. It's so important that we educate ourselves. And I've got to hop off the line now, but I just wanted to thank you again for bringing this important information to your listeners and for, you know, standing up and showing leadership in terms of helping raise awareness about this critical social issue.
Thank you very, very much for coming on the program today, Attorney George Fothery, and more importantly, Father Fothery. Okay, goodbye for now. Thank you very much for tuning in today to Public Advocate. I think we covered a lot of important issues today with George Fothery, and I am honored that he came on this program. I was delighted that he brought up the issue of the CDC whistleblower. And when I did call the Oversight Committee for Congress, I said, because you are not questioning the CDC whistleblower, people are proceeding in states, our legislatures are proceeding to mandate or remove a vaccine exemption. Had you done your job, which was to question the CDC whistleblower instead of Dr. Shook it, then perhaps the truth could have come out and this would not be happening now. So it's never too late to do the right thing. Please call the chair of the Oversight Committee in Congress and every Monday follow up with your own congressperson to see the actions that have been taken in this regard. So thank you very much. Please check the comment area when you open the link to this interview. Scroll down to the comment area, and I will add some important links that to follow up on the conversation we had. Plus, you will see the initial opening speech that George Fothery gave to the California State Legislature directly under the screen, as well as my Facebook page and my blog. I ask you to open the blog and sign a petition to Congress for a vaccine-free 2015. And what is included in that petition are the ingredients, 100% of which are toxic, the diseases that result, which are all diseases in internal medicine, and merely four parts of intent. Unfortunately, there is a lot more. There are a lot more than four parts of intent, as well as our startlingly high rate of children dying in their first year of life, and we giving the most vaccines, as well as the Nuremberg Code, as well as the German study that compared vaccinated to unvaccinated children, finding that vaccinated children had 2 to 5 times the amount of illness as unvaccinated children. So this is the legislation to Congress. This is why we want a vaccine-free 2015. I am running for mayor for a vaccine-free NYC here in New York City, and I hope that you will join me. I don't want to run all by myself. I'd like to run with a whole lot of other people who are now awake. So please join Awake New York. If you're from California, on Facebook, join Awake California. We have also Awake Texas and Awake Arizona. If you would like to start an Awake group for people who are aware of the real dangers of vaccines and are willing to take action, this is the key. On my Awake New York page, I show you how to get an exemption from vaccine. So you don't have to join the group to find out how to get an exemption. Just go to Awake New York, and in the description, it'll show you what to do. This group, Awake New York, is only for those who are willing to take action, and we have monthly action. So all the very best to everybody, and I hope that we prevail, may I just say that. And again, thank you to my distinguished guest, dad and attorney, George Fothery. All the best.